folks, welcome back to Indaba After. This is Chris once again. Live from Central Pennsylvania, it's Indaba African News of the Day today, the 11th of May, 2021. Folks, welcome back to Chris White Africa. Pleasure to have you here with us once again. Let's get started with the headlines from Africa and around the globe. Starting out in South Africa, former Spur Chief Executive Officer Pierre Fontonder, who recently attempted suicide, was unsuccessful, then passed away this past Sunday, a week after the attempted suicide, is remembered fondly by colleagues who ask for discretion for his family. The Financial Mail's Chris Roper lines up his latest target, and it's none other than Helen Zille, over her new book that's just appeared, Helen Zille's hashtag Stay Woke or Go Broke. Chris Roper attacks her over her publication of this book and his usual fashion of pretending to throw compliments, but then coming out with the knives. Pretoria is under pressure, and the South African Rugby Union as well, over the question of attendance at the upcoming British and Irish Lions tour in South Africa this July and August. The lack of spectators at the test matches between the Springboks and the British and Irish Lions could mean a loss of as much as 6.6 billion rand in revenue, or $500 million if spectators are not allowed to participate. Those pushing for attendance are asking for at least 50% attendance at the stadiums. However, at this point, there is no attendance allowed, which complicates the reality that they already sold tickets. The Springboks will be hosting Georgia in a two-test series beginning the first week in July. For 2 weeks in July, they'll play Georgia. This will be a tough opponent for the Springboks, who have not taken to the pitch in over 500 days. What will the Springboks look like? After winning the William Webb Ellis Trophy at the Rugby World Cup in Japan in 2019, they have yet to take the field. But they're not alone. Other countries are also not taking the pitch, like the USA Eagles. Speaking of the USA Eagles, England will take on the Eagles and Canada in July in their test tune-up before they head down to South Africa to take on the British and Irish Lions. So England will play against the United States USA Eagles at Twickenham on the 4th of July, ladies and gentlemen. And at the moment, the UK authorities are authorizing up to 10,000 spectators. That's a far cry from what Twickenham holds. We shall see what happens and whether I'll be able to get a ticket to attend that match. Canada will play the following weekend against the Red Roses. Namibia and South Africa have condemned Israel, yet ignore Palestinian terrorism. The United States is urging Windhoek to address corruption. And Namibia launches an Africa Growth and Opportunity Act strategy 21 years after the act first appeared. If they're successful in getting more Namibian products to U.S., there are 6,400 current product and service lines available for duty-free import into the United States. The Kazangula Bridge between Zambia and Botswana at the Chobe Crossing is finally open, ladies and gentlemen. It was opened just this week by President Lungo from Zambia and Botswana's President Eric Masisi, who both cut ribbons and opened up this beautiful bridge, which has been long awaited and anticipated. And it makes a nice little arc to avoid Zimbabwe's claim to its portion of the Zambezi River. Speaking of Zimbabwe, ZANU-PF, the ruling kleptocracy that runs Zimbabwe, claims Zimbabwe's economy is recovering, despite the fact that inflation has hit 194%. And they reneged and didn't pay on their loans last November. They say their economy is recovering. The Africa Report, a sub-entity of the Jeune Afrique, implies that U.S., China, and French involvement in security affairs in Africa is complicating security in Africa. The 12-team national basketball-owned Basketball Africa League launches the 16th of May, and ESPN, the entertainment sports programming network, the woke leftist, former once awesome news outlet, is offering a preview of what the 12 teams look like. And congratulations to my favorite football team. No, not American football, real sport, but that little candy-ass game called soccer. Congratulations to my favorite team that plays in that, Bayern Munich, which wins its unprecedented record 9th consecutive Bundesliga title. Congrats to Bayern Munich. The Reds have won 9 straight Bundesliga titles. It's been a long time since I've been to Germany and not been able to pick up a championship jersey passing through the Munich airport. Sorry for the rest of the German league, but the Reds have won it again 9 consecutive times. Congratulations to Bayern Munich, a team that during the 1930s was viewed as the Jewish team by the Nazis and was persecuted, relegated, and many of its players shipped off. Yes, the Bayern Munich has a storied history. United States Navy fires on aggressive Iranian patrol boats, which threaten naval operations in the Persian Gulf, or if you're from Iran, the Iranian Gulf. U.S. Representative Ilhan Omar attacks Israel. and ignores Palestinian terrorism. Voyager 1, launched 44 years ago, now well outside the heliosphere that is in deep space, has detected plasma hum. An interesting story about space. And woke National Broadcasting Corporation, NBC, has canceled the 2022 Golden Globes over concerns about diversity. Speaking of woke, Walt Disney Corporation's critical race theory, its racist Reimagine Tomorrow campaign to brainwash its employees, continues with leaked documents about the garbage racist nonsense that Disney is now teaching to its employees. And there are the headlines, ladies and gentlemen, for today, the 11th of May, 2021. Let's get to some in-depth analysis and conversation about these particular stories on Africa and from around the world. And with that, let me open it up here very quickly. The first one is tragic news, of course, coming out of South Africa, where a week ago, the former CEO of Spur, Pierre Fontonder, attempted suicide, failed, but then passed away this past Sunday. He shot himself at a Sea Point home in Cape Town a week ago. Former Spur CEO Pierre Fontonder, who helped build the chain from 40 to more than 630 restaurants, was skilled in mentoring juniors into senior managers and bringing the best out of people, say former colleagues, as tributes poured in for one of the most well-known figures in the restaurant industry. He died in hospital on Sunday at the age of 62, a week after he shot himself at a Sea Point apartment. Survived by his wife and two adult children. He retired from the restaurant chain in December after spending almost four decades working his way up from junior restaurant manager to managing director and CEO. He led Spur, which makes money from fees paid by franchise owners, for 24 years as it expanded into 16 other countries and bought the successful steakhouse chain Hussar Grill, as well as successful Roca Mama's burger chain and the Nico's brand. He mentored in many franchisees and started training academies for staff and franchise owners and middle management. He's been introducing new virtual brands, including sushi and burgers sold only over Uber Eats and Mr. D and made at Spur restaurants, but marketed under different brands to attract a different clientele. His death is a loss to the whole industry, said Restaurant Association of South Africa chair Wendy Alberts, who also described him as a formidable, respected, and impeccable leader. It shows how real depression is. It's not just the first suicide in the restaurant industry during the pandemic. What happened to him is a story that has played out throughout the industry. Fontonder's retirement came 4 months ago when the industry's biggest challenge was filling seats after the government imposed lockdown measures and alcohol bans that left companies scrambling for cash to make up for sales losses and navigate challenges posed by the pandemic. Wendy Alberts, the CEO of the Restaurant Association of South Africa, has been a guest on Chris White Africa on a few occasions, and we appreciate her words about Pierre Fontonder. One of the viewers of our program was an associate of his and told us he was just a wonderful person. Meanwhile, Financial Mail's Chris Roper has chosen his latest target to attack, and surprise, surprise, not. It's Helen Zille. And why is he attacking her? Over her recent book, Helen Zille, hashtag Stay Woke or Go Broke, Why South Africa Won't Survive America's Culture Wars, and What You Can Do About It. Well, how does he have to say about this? Let's take a look at what Chris Roper has to say. You may not agree with her, but Helen Zille's new book is incisive and aptly articulates South Africa's profound despair, but she goes wrong when she goes to war against the mythical enemy of wokeness. One of the foot simpletons in Helen Zille's new alt-woke brigade felt the need to praise her by comparing her new book with those of noted Canadian self-help philosopher Jordan Peterson. It's a sort of misplaced cheerleading based on a tribal identity that reveals the paucity of her current fan base and their intellectual constraints. Wow. Wow. In just a matter of moments, Chris Roper has not only insulted Helen Zille, but anyone who buys her book. So you know what I have to say to you, Chris Roper? I think that my intellect can hold up decades of more experience and actual accomplishment in my life than you'll ever accomplish writing nasty, snarky little comments as an op-ed writer for a publication with a mere 24,000 circulation. My humble little YouTube channel before I was censored had nearly as many subscribers as your newspaper, paying subscribers, I should say. Yeah, this unnecessary attack on Helen Zille just shows more misogynistic nonsense. And he gets away with it because, you know, he's left or center left. And that's just what the media loves to do. So we won't even go any more depth on that disgusting and vile attack on Helen Zille and people who bought her book. I've read Karl Marx. Doesn't make me a communist, Chris Roper. Doesn't make me a communist. I've read books about Che Guevara. Doesn't make me a socialist, leftist, philandering interloper like Che Guevara was, sticking my nose in other people's business. People read books to learn what other people have to say, whether you agree with them or not, Chris Roper. And it's unfortunate you choose to do a book review in the form of an op-ed that is insulting and disrespecting not only to Helen Zille, but people who buy her book. So maybe you should get some of the feedback that you deserve. Meanwhile, The Springboks finally going to take the pitch. A two-test series against Georgia. Not an easy opponent, ladies and gentlemen. Georgia has done very well, made the argument they should be part of the Six Nations, although that's yet to happen. The Springboks, under the new coach, Jacques Niebenar, will be taking on the Lions in a two-test series the first 2 weeks of July. This will be the first time they've taken a pitch since they beat England 32-12 at the Rugby World Cup final in Yokohama in October of 2019. They'll host Georgia the weekends 2-3 July and 9-10 with the exact venues and dates to be announced shortly, according to Saru. Jacques, his coaching staff, and the manager have been working around the clock to get the team as well prepared as possible, and the Georgia series is a much-needed opportunity after such a long and unforeseen interruption due to the pandemic, Springbok director of rugby Rassi Erasmus said in a statement. South Africa and Georgia only met once before in a senior international competition, with the Boks running out of 46-19 winners in the group stage in the 2003 Rugby World Cup in Australia. The teams had been due to meet in South Africa last year, but the match was canceled due to the pandemic. Italy have canceled their tour of New Zealand this summer due to concerns of traveling. The summer tour, scheduled for July with two test matches against the All Blacks, will now not take place, leaving New Zealand rugby scrambling to save their July test window. After constructive consultations between federations, well, what I have to say about that is that the All Blacks now, if they want, could possibly play the Eagles. Why not? Come to the USA and play the Eagles again. Instead of doing Chicago, let's do it at the Meadowlands or somewhere like that, ladies and gentlemen. Now that the All Blacks don't have the Italians to play, they have a window. The Springboks were rumored to be playing the Eagles, but it looks like that's not going to happen with the two test matches against Georgia. England will play against the Eagles, but the Eagles don't have a British and Irish Lions test series after that. So they would be a free. And I imagine that Gary Gold would not mind, even though it would likely be a shellacking for the Eagles, the opportunity to play against the All Blacks once again would be pretty amazing. So perhaps maybe something could be afoot there. But meantime, the Eagles, in fact, do have test matches this summer, at least a test match, and that is against England. England will host USA and Canada in front of as much as 10,000 spectators. And you can guarantee that'll be sold out, 10,000 at Twickenham. There's no doubt about that. Hopefully the numbers will be increased, but that's the numbers for now. Eddie Jones' side will host the U.S. on July 4th and Canada on July 10th. Before these two tests, England's A side will play Scotland's A side on the 27th of June at Leicester's Matolly Woods, Welford Road, where 6,000 fans will be allowed. It'll be the first time fans will be allowed to attend England's games since they defeated France in the Autumn Nations Cup final in December. Because, of course, the Six Nations, there were no fans. In what was unfortunately a rather boring and mundane game to watch, without fans in the stands, rugby is not the same, ladies and gentlemen. It is not the same game. Hockey, the NHL can get away without having fans in the stands, but you can't do it for rugby. It's just not the same. Meanwhile, Namibia and South Africa both condemned Israel for violence against Palestinians. This from both capitals. South Africa and Namibia condemned recent clashes at the Al-Aqsa Mosque, where Israeli soldiers attacked Palestinian worshippers while praying at Islam's third holiest site. Not entirely accurate report, but we'll move on from there. The ANC said in a statement on the weekend it condemns the determination of the Israeli regime to evict Palestinians from their homes in Sheikh al-Jarrah, East Jerusalem. Now, if you'll notice that this is the Anadolu agency, it's a Turkish news agency, so hardly objective in its reporting, and the evidence is at the bottom here. Al-Aqsa Mosque is Islam's third holiest site. Actually, that's not true. That's not true. Its third holiest site is located in Tunisia, at Karawan. Jews call the area the Temple Mount, and they put that in quotes, claiming it was the site of two Jewish temples in ancient times. Those aren't claims. Those are actual proven facts. Archaeological evidence proves that the Temple Mount was first occupied and built upon by Jews, by Hebrews. So, you know, a little objectivity would be nice. I realize that you come from a country that's ostensibly secular, but really is a Muslim country. You can be objective, Andalou, and stop falsely reporting the story. The fact is, the Temple Mount was a Jewish site long before Islam even existed. Islam is the most junior of the world's major religions, existing for a short period of time, only after 622, when Muhammad got his message from God. So it's a junior religion, folks. And let's see some objective reporting. It'd be nice. Meanwhile, the United States is urging Namibia to deal with the corruption after the fish rot scandal, after additional scandals in which senior party officials have been linked to all sorts of illegal tenders and bribes and things like that. The United States is urging Namibia to deal with corruption. It's advising Namibia to prioritize fighting corruption by enacting access to information law and in fully implementing whistleblower protections. It was made during the 38th session of the Working Group on the Third Universal Periodic Review, the UPR, for Namibia. Namibia's first and second UPR reviews took place in 2011 and 2016, respectively. Although Namibia is ranked fourth least corrupt country in Africa by the Corruption Perceptions Index, it has yet to establish a whistleblower protection office, despite having a law been passed almost 4 years ago. Well, it may have the lowest, amongst the lowest perceptions, but clearly the fish rot scandal is something that has shaken the ruling SWAPO party and caused all sorts of distress. Interestingly enough, Namibia has launched a program to take advantage and promote access to the Africa Growth and Opportunity Act, a piece of legislation that was passed under the Clinton administration over 2 decades ago. And Namibia is now coming up with a strategy to deal with it. It shows you just how poorly informed African countries are to take advantage of duty-free access to the U.S. market. Nearly 7,000 goods and services can be exported to the United States for eligible countries, including Namibia, duty-free. An unfair advantage to African exports to America while we still pay duty to send our goods and services into Africa. But the amount of money coming out of Africa to the United States is so small, and what we sell over there is such a paucity, a small amount, that it really does not affect our economy. But it is a boon for African countries, and it is shocking that Namibia is just now launching a strategy after 21 years. U.S. Ambassador Lisa Johnson joined Minister of Industrialization and Trade Lucia Lumpumbu to officially launch Namibia's Africa Growth Opportunity Utilization Strategy. The strategy seeks to increase Namibia's exports under the GO program, which allows nearly 7,000 products tariff-free access to the United States. Joint effort to develop the GO strategy is part of the United States' effort to expand mutually beneficial trade with Namibia. Again, my question is, where has SWAPO been for 21 years? Hello? For a nominal, small, tiny fee, I will advise you. In fact, I'll advise you for free on a GOA. Wake up. Unbelievable. Meanwhile, the long-anticipated, much-awaited Kazangula Bridge, which was built with Japanese Development Agency and African Development Bank money, yet the president of Zambia chose to praise the Chinese. And they're the ones that didn't even fund it. But this long-awaited bridge, which skirts around Zimbabwe's claim to the Zambezi River and keeps it just in the waters claimed by both Botswana and Zambia, will greatly facilitate trade, also alleviate a lot of pressure on the Bight Bridge crossing. But it will cause problems for Botswana, which will now have to spend significantly more resources to keep the road from Chobe to Habaroni in serviceable condition. It'll also increase traffic at the Remotswa crossing as well as the Kopfontein crossing in Botswana in South Africa for traffic headed down through there. It should increase truck volume significantly as trade increases rapidly. The Kazangulu Bridge is a boon for the region, linking Botswana and Zambia. Beautiful looking bridge. It appears to have a pedestrian and bicycle or cart lanes on both sides, in addition to dual carriageway separated by a middle divide. Beautiful looking. And you can see one of the ferries out there in the water across the Zambezi. Now, this is the point where the Chobe and the Zambezi River combine to form the Zambezi headed further to the east and south. Botswana and Zambia have inaugurated a road and rail bridge linking the two countries, marking the completion of a multi-million dollar project aimed at easing congestion at border crossings and boosting trade, not to mention delays. Stretching for 923 meters over the Zambezi, the curved Kazangula Bridge provides a long-needed alternative route for haulers. This will lower the cost of doing business, Zambia's President Lunga said at a ribbon-cutting ceremony Monday, anticipating an increase in trade, competitiveness, job creation, tourism, and other positive ripple effects. Botswana's President Mokwetsi, or Eric Masisi, said the bridge would open avenues for improved trade. He also says country regarded Zambia as a key strategic partner in development, adding the project was a demonstration of the continued growing relations.
Benefits of this structure that we have constructed.
The project consists of three packages. Package 1 is the 923 meter long, 18.5 meter wide cable stayed road and rail bridge, including the approach ramps. The bridge is designed as an extra-dosed road-rail bridge to accommodate a future railway line which will link Mosidze Kazangula in Botswana to Kazangula Livingston in Zambia. Once operational, the bridge and its associated works will facilitate the efficiency of trade and boost the regional economy as a vital road link of the North-South Corridor. The North-South Corridor is a major trade route within SADC, and it benefits such countries as Botswana, Zambia, Tanzania, Malawi, Zimbabwe, DRC, South Africa, Namibia, and Mozambique, making this project an important aid for trade between the countries.
We have been using the ferry, which is the pontoon. So in those pontoons, we have been experiencing very, very, very long queues, both sides from Zambia and Botswana side. We we are expecting that within this new development, we are going to have a smooth movement.
The project is expected to significantly reduce transit time for freight and passengers, as well as improve the water management operations arising from the one-stop water facilities.
The pontoon, it was so hectic, and we had too many challenges over this.
We are so excited as truck drivers for the opening of the bridge. I would like to thank both governments, the Zambian government and the Botswana government, for coming up with such a very successful project.
The magnificent infrastructure will facilitate quick access to international markets through connectivity with major seaports, as well as contribute to maximizing the operational efficiency of the corridor, enhancing regional economic integration. The Kazungula Bridge is therefore a vital transport infrastructure on the NSC corridor that facilitates easy access.
I can't tell you folks just how important and how big a game changer the Kazungula Bridge is for not just Zambia and Botswana, but for the entire region. This will be immense. The long queues and lines for traffic coming through the Bight Bridge crossing between Zimbabwe and Botswana will remain, but this will greatly facilitate the possibility for increased trade, provided Botswana can maintain its roads from Chobe down to Habarone, which is a critically important part of this whole process. Hopefully they put the money in there. The last time I traveled, which has been several years ago, from Francistown to Chobe, I thought I was going to need dental work after that. The road was in such poor condition, which was quite a change, because the time I traveled on it just 5 or 10 years prior to that, it had been in excellent condition. So it is up to Botswana now to ensure that their roads are serviceable for this coming traffic. And we'll see what happens. And there you have it, folks. This is amazing. The Kazungula Bridge is finally in service, and it will be a boon for the region. Speaking of the region, Zimbabwe, which is not part of the Kazungula Bridge, is saying ZANU-PF, the ruling party, says that the economy is recovering. It's on the road to recovery due to good rainy season and good agriculture. That's the word from ZANU-PF. But inflation is running at 194%, and the same government recently defaulted on loans, international loans. Before the pandemic, Zimbabwe's economy is already suffering recession, but hopes are pinned on a good agricultural season after 2 years of devastating droughts. The country's cabinet says this year's harvest expected to yield 2.8 million tons of maize to help strengthen the troubled economy. Of course, all that maize being produced is going to lead to a decline in prices. The more supply you have, the lower the price. Meanwhile, a subsidiary of Jeune Afrique, the Africa Report, is implying that U.S., Chinese, and French involvement in security issues across Africa, particularly in the Sahel, are complicating security matters. Well, I dare tell you that I disagree with Jeune Afrique. The fact that the U.S., France, and the Chinese are involved is because of the utter disaster in security affairs, particularly in the Sahel, but not exclusively, also in the Horn of Africa as well. The United States, France, and China have nothing to do with these crises. They have nothing to do with exacerbating them. If anything, they've greatly reduced the harm from these. But much can be done. So, U.S., France, China. Africa's security woes complicated by foreign boots. As the Sahel security calculus is upended by the death of President Debe of Chad and Boko Haram threatens Abuja, President Buhari is hoping for U.S. to help quell the violence, even suggesting U.S. Special Command for Africa. AFRICOM be located near the theater. Meanwhile, China's push to put a new port for its warships on Africa's western coast is ringing alarm bells in Washington, and Russia continues its greater military cooperation efforts on the continent. Is this going to spark a new strategic battle for Africa, or can African nations push back? Well, the comments are poorly founded. African nations aren't pushing back. African nations are welcoming this involvement. They're asking for the involvement. Now, contrary to President Buhari, who has suggested that the U.S. Africa Command, which is not a special command, the Africa Report's terminology is incorrect. It is a combatant command. It's not special. That implies that special forces, which is not for the average non-military defense analyst. It is simply a combatant command responsible for a geographic region of the world. A region that was previously split between the Pacific Command, based in Hawaii, Central Command, based in Tampa, Florida, and European Command, based in Stuttgart. With the advent of U.S. Africa Command as a sub-unified command in October of 2007, and then 1 year later as a fully functional command on October 1st, 2008, U.S. Africa Command became the first ever geographically focused combatant command on Africa issues. Contrary to the myths, lies, and fantasies of leftists and sycophants who follow them around, and political leaders who use this for domestic gain, opposing the creation of the U.S. Africa Command, which they have no business in whatsoever. The U.S. Africa Command has not been what it was claimed to be. It has actually been a force for good in Africa, providing disaster response and training, as well as humanitarian assistance, participating in the Ebola response in 2014 in the Mono River region, providing counterterrorism training, providing security assistance training, professionalization, respect for civil authority, all sorts, a host of military assistance and defense assistance, which was far lower in volume because none of the previous commands were focused at all in Africa. U.S. Pacific Command was focused on China, Japan, the Korean Straits, the Korean Peninsula, Taiwan, the South China Seas, even India, the islands of East Africa, Comoros, Mauritius, Madagascar, and the Seychelles were an afterthought for Pacific Command, who had responsibility for them and devoted little in the way of resources or analysts to those countries. Central Command was focused on Iran, the Persian Gulf, Saudi Arabia, the Horn of Africa was not a priority for them, yet they were responsible for the Horn of Africa. And the rest of Africa, 75% of the surface area, fell under U.S. European Command, which was busy fighting a Cold War against the Soviet Union, the Warsaw Pact, and then dealing with the integration of Eastern Europe into the modern world after the fall of communism and the Berlin Wall. Africa was a tertiary concern for the European Union. With the advent of the U.S. Africa Command, the U.S. military finally had a four-star general who each year must testify before Congress, justifying his request for resources to support our national interest in Africa. And it was long overdue. Contrary to President Buhari, I disagree that U.S. Africa Command needs to be in Africa. It does not. Historically, not a single U.S. combatant command with a geographic responsibility was stationed outside the United States, with the exception of European Command. Because of historical reasons and the Second World War, the European Command was established in Germany, and it remained there, and it still remains there. No other combatant command was outside the United States. Pacific Command, or now Indo-Pacific Command, is based in Hawaii, U.S. soil, and U.S. state. Southern Command was based in the Panama Canal Zone, U.S. soil, until we gave it back under Carter to Panama. And since then, they've been located in Miami, on U.S. soil. Central Command is located in Tampa, Florida, not in the Middle East. Not a single U.S. combatant command, with the exception of the historical precedent, historical anomaly of European Command, was ever based outside the United States. Creating Africa Command in Stuttgart was an anomaly. There's no reason for it whatsoever to be in Africa. There's no need for it. It's a headquarters with people who plan and get resources. There are no combat troops. There are no helicopters. There are no tanks. There are no planes. There is no combat fighting power resonant with U.S. Africa Command. That's a myth. It's a lie. It's a fiction by unknowing or dishonest people who simply refuse to tell the truth. And that command can be based on the surface of the moon, provided we had reliable communications links back to the United States and to the theater. It doesn't have to be there. So it's perfectly fine in Stuttgart where it's at. President Buhari is misplaced in asking for it to come to Africa. There's no need for it. And the Africa Report is wrong in its assertion that the reason that it's not in Africa is because of pushback by African leaders. In fact, the United States Defense Department never genuinely intended for it to be in Africa, simply to get the Department of State's cooperation in the creation of the command and get officers and personnel from other executive branch agencies to come to the command. They created this fiction of a unique hybrid command that was different, kinder and gentler than other combatant commands. But that's a myth. As I pointed out at the time, as a serving officer, when there would be combat, this command would be responsible for organizing the resources and executing and planning the operation in Africa. And that has proven to be the case, as well as humanitarian assistance, professional leadership, military, weapon sales, training, civil military affairs, all of those things. There was never any genuine intent to put in Africa. There was a survey team that traveled around Africa, but that was just to mollify the Department of State. It was never going to be there. The question was whether it was going to be in Georgia, New Jersey, South Carolina, or stay in Stuttgart. And it wound up in Stuttgart. So the Africa Report is off base. Meanwhile, the National Basketball Association's wholly owned Basketball Africa League, or the BAL, has 12 teams and it launches on 16 May. Kigali is where the first game will be played. There you go. Ball is here. Basketball Africa League. 16 to 30 May. It's a tournament. The 12-team Basketball Africa League is finally set up. Tip-off in Kigali on the 16th of May, more than a year after it was scheduled to start owing to the pandemic. Initially scheduled to start on March 13th, 2020 in Dakar, but postponed the continent-wide event. The whole tournament was moved to a bubble in Kigali, and the regular season was changed to a group stage format. So if you'd like to find out about the teams, you got Angola, Egypt, Morocco, Nigeria, Senegal, Tunisia, all qualified as automatic qualifiers. But here is the grouping, and it's a tournament, not a league for this year. We'll see what happens going forward, but this year it will simply be a tournament, not an actual league. And congratulations to Bayern München, who win their 9th consecutive Bundesliga crown. Unprecedented, record-setting 9th. Each and every year they keep winning. Bayern München crowned Bundesliga champions for the 9th consecutive time. Can you believe it, ladies and gentlemen? Bayern München are Bundesliga champions for record-extending 9th consecutive time. Leipzig's defeat to Borussia Dortmund sealing the deal even before Hansa Flick's men kicked off their match day 32 game with Borussia Mönchengladbach. Leipzig have been Bayern's nearest challenges for much of this campaign, but they came into the meeting with Borussia at dress rehearsal for Thursday's cup final, trailing the record champions by 7 points. Their 3-2 loss leaves them with only 6 left to play against Wolfsburg and Union Berlin in the final 2 games of the season, meaning a record 30th Bundesliga title.
I don't know, 1 hour before the game, for sure we know that we are already champion, but for us, more important was that show on the pitch that we are the champion and show the best football. And today what we did during the game, that was spectacular, that was amazing, because we scored so many goals and we showed that we are the best in this season. Yes, now I have the chance to break this record. For sure, that will be not easy still, because, okay, we have 2 games, and if I want to break, I have to score 2 goals. But, I have to work hard in the next game, because, you know, I know that will be not so easy, but to break this record, that will be something amazing as for me as well, because, you know, if you have only 34 games, even less in my situation this season, that will be something. I have to say that I need to believe as well that can happen, but now I have the chance and I have to be ready for this.
And there you have it. That's Lewandowski from Bayern München, folks. Record 9th consecutive Bundesliga title. Wow. Welcome. A team that I've supported since 1984, even though I'm not a fan of the sport. U.S. naval ships fire on aggressive Iranian patrol boats. You can see some of them there approaching the U.S. ships. A group of 13 armed speedboats of Iran's Revolutionary Guard made unsafe and unprofessional high-speed maneuvers toward U.S. naval vessels in the Strait of Hormuz on Monday. A U.S. Coast Guard cutter fired warning shots when 2 of the Iranian boats came dangerously close, U.S. officials said. It was the second time in 2 weeks the U.S. ship opened fire to warn vessels of Iran's paramilitary Revolutionary Guard. The encounters come as the United States and Iran are in indirect talks in Vienna aimed at reviving the foolish 2015 Iran nuclear deal, which the United States smartly left in 2018. Iran is threatening us militarily while we're negotiating with them about this nuclear deal. How do you deal with a country like this? They're not legitimate. Meanwhile, U.S. Representative Ilhan Omar is attacking Israel, accusing Israel of terrorism amid clashes with Hamas. Representatives Rashid Tlaib, Ariana Presley, and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez also voiced concerns. You know them, the Squad. She accused Israel of terrorism following deadly airstrikes in the Gaza Strip after Hamas reportedly launched 7 rockets at Jerusalem. This is what she had to say. Israeli airstrikes killing civilians in Gaza is an act of terrorism. Palestinians deserve protection. Unlike Israel, missile defense programs such as Iron Dome don't exist to protect Palestinian civilians. It's unconscionable and to not condemn these attacks during the week of Eid al-Fitr, which is going on right now. What's unconscionable is for Hamas to launch rockets into Israel, murdering innocent civilians. That's an act of terrorism. Hamas, which receives comfort and succor from the Palestinian Authority, funded by the United States to the tune of hundreds of millions, billions of dollars. Speaking of funding terrorism, the United States is clearly funding terrorism and supporting the Palestinian Authority. Where is her concern about that? Where is her concern about that? She and the rest of the Squad members and their anti-Semitic hatred of Israel are distressing, to say the least. The fact that these people are represented members of government, talk about racism and bigotry, they should be called out for it, and they're lack of objectivity. You want to accuse Israel of terrorism, firing self-defense? The reason they have the Iron Dome is because they spent the money on it to develop that system. The Palestinians could have used it instead of spending their money on terrorism and blowing up Israeli buses. They could have done that. Money could have been used to protect themselves. Or they could simply stop firing rockets at Israeli civilians and then they wouldn't be shot at. The irony, the cheek of Representative Omar to run her mouth and tell half the story is astounding. The fact the media only reports half the story is not surprising. Meanwhile, Voyager 1, one of the original deep space probes the United States launched nearly 50 years ago, has detected plasma hum in deep space. In the emptiness of space, Voyager 1 detects a plasma hum. One of 2 sibling NASA spacecraft launched 44 years ago, and now the most distant human-made object in space still works and zooms toward infinity. The craft has long since zipped past the edge of the solar system through the heliopause, the solar system's border with interstellar space, into the interstellar medium. Now its instruments have detected the constant drone of interstellar gas, or plasma waves, according to Cornell University-led research published in Nature Astronomy. Examining data slowly sent back from more than 14 billion miles away. Launched in September 1977, the Voyager 1 spacecraft flew by Jupiter in 1979 and then Saturn in late 1980, traveling at about 38,000 miles per hour. Voyager 1 crossed the heliopause in August of 2012. After entering interstellar space, the spacecraft's plasma wave system detected perturbations in the gas. But in between those eruptions caused by our own roiling sun, researchers have uncovered a steady, persistent signature produced by the tenuous near vacuum of space. There you have it, folks. Voyager 1 is still out there. Remember, famously, in one of the Star Trek movies, they had an alien spacecraft, an alien entity known as V'ger, which was Voyager, but part of Voyager was covered up. So it thought its name was V'ger after being damaged in interstellar space. National Broadcasting Corporation, NBC, has taken its wokeness to a new level, canceling a year in advance the Gold Globe Awards because they are angry that not enough black voices received awards by the Golden Globes in 2021. So the response is to cancel them. Cancellation could have serious ramifications for Hollywood's Foreign Press Association, which relies heavily on television rights for funding. Television network NBC has announced it would drop its broadcast of the Golden Globe ceremony in 2022 after a Hollywood backlash over the ethics of the group that hands out the annual awards for film and television and its lack of diversity. Actor Tom Cruise joined a revolt led by streaming platforms and studios returning the three Golden Globes he won for his roles in Jerry Maguire, Magnolia, and Born on the 4th of July, industry media outlets Variety and Deadline Hollywood reported. NBC's announcement decision on Monday came even after the Hollywood Foreign Press Association, which hands out the awards, agreed to recruit more black members and make other changes over the next 18 months. Network initially welcomed the plan, but later said it would wait to see if the reforms worked. Well, on that matter, I would ask this. When will National Broadcasting Corporation cancel its contract with the National Football League and stop broadcasting racist NFL games? Of course. 65% of the players in the National Football League are black, yet they make up only 13.5% of the U.S. population. So where's the diversity there? Where's the equal representation of population groups? Why isn't the National Basketball Association freaking out that 78% of its players are black? NBC's woke garbage is corrosive to the social well-being of this country. And it's blackmail. And as far as Tom Cruise, Mr. Scientologist, you're already on shaky ground with viewers. Now you'll find yourself unappealing in the maximum. But I suppose you have all the money you've fleeced from people with your diminutive acting skills over the decades. NBC. Helen Zilla says it correctly. Stay woke, go broke. This will be the death of NBC, and they will be joined by another major media outlet, the shameful organization that disgraces the memory of Walt Disney. The Disney Company is embracing race politics, critical race theory, and employee training, according to leaked documents. The Walt Disney Corporation is pushing its quasi-Marxist critical race theory in on its employees, teaching them that America has a long history of systemic racism, while urging them to reflect that they're white privilege, according to leaked internal documents. And I would ask this of you, Disney. And what of your long history of ignoring minorities in your film history and your programs? You had no interest whatsoever in recruiting black Mickey Mouse Club members or Hispanic Mickey Mouse Club members or Asian Mickey Mouse Club members or making movies about historic fairy tales and myths that come from the non-European world. Yet you deign to tell us, you deign to pollute the minds of your employees with your racist ideology. Be gone. Enough of this nonsense. And those are the headlines, ladies and gentlemen, today with in-depth analysis on the 11th of May, 2021. Thank you for tuning in to Indaba African News of the Day. We'll catch you each and every day here on Chris White Africa. And thank you for your patronage.